December 4th, 2021, it's Watt for Pedro Show.
But at that moment, it was so vivid in my mind, the difference in the what I was getting on the horn. It was so vivid in my mind, so I couldn't do it, because as soon as I do it, I'd hear it, and it just discouraged me, see. But after a year or so passed, well, I'd forgotten.
Pedro Show? Oh, asshole. You know, 20 years, Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. Started out John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky November 66. More about his mouthpiece and how he fucked up, but he kind of forgot about it. Earn. Hey, there's a fucking leash. Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, that was my drummer man from Second Man, Jerry Trebtich. I'm doing the show, though, so you have to wait, Jerry. Okay, No from Earn, which, people, you could hear another voice, so you know Watt ain't man alone, because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got with me Mr. B. Rouse. Brother B. Rouse, welcome aboard.
What's up?
And we got to give big respect to Blake Edwards for making the connect.
Thank you, Blake.
Yeah. And another man dear to our hearts and our minds, Brent Goodsight.
What's up, Brent? Thank you, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, curious about your journey through music. You're up in Oaktown, right?
Yeah, I'm in Oakland. I lived here 16 of the past 23 years.
Okay, yeah, but you don't get started there. In fact, I want to go as far back as you can fucking remember, Brother B.
Yeah.
Please bring your earliest music record.
All right. I will. You know, my parents were Hare Krishnas. You know who the Hare Krishnas are?
We got them in SoCal. In fact, Kay, you know, played bass in Black Flag. She said for a while that's where only place, because they would give free chow out, and she would go to their thing. Yeah. Saved her life.
Yeah, definitely. That's good to hear. They gave out good vegetarian food, and the other thing that they did is they play music in their devotional services.
Can I tell you one music connect? It's really short. Me and D. Booth, the first gig we saw was the T-Rex, right? And his daddy took us, you know, from Nebraska. He sat with us and shit. In front of us was some Hare Krishnas with sparklers.
Whoa.
Yeah, just that little tangent there, but go on, please.
I like that. Yeah, so my parents are Hare Krishnas. I grew up around these musical devotional ceremonies. You know, they have these drums. People wear these drums around their neck. One is a kind of deeper sound, one is a higher sound. They also give out little cymbals, and you play these little triplets on the cymbals. And they sing and they dance. And so I was around these musical devotional ceremonies, and that's my earliest memory of music.
But you became a stick man with a beat in the hand. So I think this is fucking fundamental.
I can't help but trace it back to those fundamental experiences of that rhythm, that little triplet in the devotional service.
Yeah, that the whole Asian thing with cymbals, right? Gamelan, it can get melodic.
Totally.
I mean, the idea that drum hits 8 notes, they're just really short.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other thing. So that's beautiful. So, of course, they had, the drums and stuff where they had the services and stuff. But what about in the pad? Did you grow up with stuff in the pad, instruments?
Not really. By the time I turned 13, I was already playing in bands. Actually, Urn, or URN, was the band that I sang in when I was 13 years old. And from being around that band, I started hitting around on the drum set. And my mom, bless her...
Oh, you started as... Your first instrument was your voice.
Yeah, I was a vocalist in URN.
Can I go back a little before? What about the school shit? Were you in the choir or marching band or shit like that?
No, nothing like that.
Okay.
There was no other instruments
around. And can I ask you the first record you bought with your own money?
It's hard for me to pinpoint that.
It's a Walk for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
I have an older brother. His name's Victor. He's 3 years older than me, so I benefited from him being into cool stuff. So he's the one who got me into skateboarding.
Well, why I ask him that question is because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. So that's why. Just a sec. Brother Matt. Are you in the alley, Brother Matt?
Say what?
Okay, I'm doing the show right now. B, can you hang on just a second? Brother Matt brought me some fucking bluefin tuna.
Nice, no worries. Do what you gotta do. Go.
Just a moment.
It's all good. No worries. You got a tuna delivery.
I mean, Pedro dude's gonna bring you some fucking tuna. You don't look that in the mouth, huh? Okay.
No way. No
problem. So your first music was like brought onto you by the older brother. Oh, can I ask you the first gig you went to?
I remember Victor and I had a cassette that was sacred to us. That was the Misfits Walk Among Us cassette.
Oh yeah, of course.
And that was our prized first cassette between the two of us.
Can you remember the first gig you saw?
Sometime in the late 80s, I started going to shows all at once. A lot. And something like with my skateboarder friends, something like Circle Jerks.
Keith.
In the late 80s, 89 or so.
Right. Keith Morris.
Yeah.
Old friend of mine. Okay. So you start a singer. Now, did you volunteer or were you asked?
To be a singer, it started out just by messing around, really just messing around with.
You mean like after school, the garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band? Okay.
Really, it was like after skateboarding. We would go skate, we would come home, and then my friend Justin had a guitar. He started playing guitar. I just started rambling over it.
Hey, B, can you talk about that, the connect between music and skateboard? I've tried to, but I think it has something to do with being Econo, and you can do it anywhere, and I don't know.
Yeah, it's for me, it's such a close, intimate connection between the two experiences, and they both had to do with being somewhat of an outsider, and a skateboard. Really, you need to get a skateboard. You had to round up some money to get one, but once you had it, you could go just grind a curb and meet up with your friends. There was this parking garage that we would all go skate at when it was raining, and people built little ramps in there. And in Florida, it rained a lot in the summertime, so people would bring their boom boxes. They would play the punk music. And on the skateboarder videos, that's where I learned a lot about punk, a lot about music, was those skate videos, those early videos from Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a fire hose song on one of those.
Exactly.
I've had so many kids. Actually, cats in Europe told me they learned how to skate from the videos.
That's really cool. Yeah, so there's something about that outsider, econo, budget living that just really brought the two of punk and skateboarder
culture together. And skating launched me into punk when I was 12 or 13 years old, and I never left punk.
Yeah, but there's something about it. Right? I mean, it's about expressing yourself, right? And kind of artistic. Why not call it artistically expressing yourself?
Absolutely.
But it also is econo, so a lot of cats can get into it. But it's also open-ended enough so you can, like, bring in your own styles and whatever.
You're right.
Still have a lot of common ground with your cats, your peers.
And it's a way to spend time with people. You know, skating alone was never something I really did. You always went out and skate with a few other friends. And to this day, going to band practice is just as much a way of keeping friendships and spending time with people and creating something together as it is you know, doing so-called music. You know, it's a lot about the relationships and having a space to create together.
You know, I got to tell you, you're right on the money, man. There's nothing like an ensemble, being part of an ensemble.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you're man alone, right? Especially maybe composing or a prac or something. But man, when you're together with your cats, oh my God. Oh
yeah,
my God.
And as a drummer, you know, you like to find people to play with who elicit from you cool drum beats. Yeah, you can sit around and write a drum beat, but there's something about someone throws down a riff and it draws out of you something that you didn't expect. That's what one of the things I really enjoy about playing with other people, because it's the combination of the people together that makes it go unexpected places that you wouldn't go by yourself.
And I gotta tell you, these bands without a bass, that poor lonely kick drum, no one to dance with. Yeah, maybe there's more room in the boat, but I don't know if it's a good enough trade-off for me. Okay.
Yeah.
So that first gig, though, I mean, your first gigs was as a singer, man. Can you remember your first gig?
I do. I remember it very clearly.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it was a little tiny club called the Star Club in Tampa, in Florida, a little place called Ybor City.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. The cigars, right? That's where they first rolled cigars, I think.
Bingo. Exactly.
See, the advantages of touring, all the knowledge.
What's that?
The knowledge you can gain by being a tour.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, so I remember the Star Club being super intimidated and scared because I was 13, but also feeling right at home because the friends we had from going to shows stood right up front with us. Everyone was kind of goofy and a little wild, heckling each other, jumping around. And so there was even though we were young and didn't know what the hell we were doing, there was already a sense of we were playing for our friends, and I just remember that really clearly.
So, bottom line, gig was success.
Yeah.
And the material, were you already composing, or were you guys doing covers?
No, we were composing. We did some cover songs for fun and to kind of because we liked bands and we wanted to play their songs, but we did mostly originals with just one cover.
See, that's what I love about the movement, man. Because when me and D Boom were young, nobody did that.
Right.
Everybody
on.
Everybody copied off records, you know, like building models. Look, you gave me this some music here. The End of the Century Party. I want to play this. The Convenience Store Regular.
Yeah. Stop moving, but I'll just 6'10". You know how big Jim Johnson is. Well, this is bigger. Much, 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 much bigger. And from hell it came, and to hell we'll send it, gonna catch the monster. The monster is on the loose. Goodbye, my dear friends. I've gone to catch the monster. Goodbye, Mary. I've got to go. Goodbye, Charlie. Goodbye. Judging from the footprints, it's half man, half bear, half gator. And it weighs 300 or 400 pounds. Maybe even more. Maybe even more. Got some rope that's good and strong. 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 A rock and a great big stick. If it wants a fight, it's gotta fight. I'm going to catch the monster from hell it came, from the depths of Hades. I'm going to catch the monster. The monster is on the loose. And if I had to guess how big it is, I'd guess about 6'10". Maybe 6'11". That's big. That's real big. Goodbye, Mary. Goodbye, Kelly. I might not never return. Goodbye to all my friends. Goodbye, Charlie. Goodbye. Goodbye. Go.
Clearly in the light, everything suddenly makes so much sense. We are one. We are together. We are the light. You are the light that shines upon us all. You are the light that shines upon us all. You are the light that shines upon us all.
Chunk of music started off with the End of the Century Party, Convenience Store Regular, then Ava Mendoza. She's got a brand. She lived up city or East Bay for a while. She's in New York City now. Incredible guitarist. And Ampulix Compressa. She's got a new album, and Trevor Dunn wrote her that piece of music, solo guitar. SLWCC Watt with Creep in a Trench Coat. This is a collab I got with Sam Locke Ward, Iowa City. Helvetia. Helvetia's got a new album, and Why Am I Missing? Same with Cedric Noel, his new record. This is called Still, and both Joyful Noise, good stuff, that label. From the Bay Area, James Twig Harper, well, he's in Baltimore now, but the other part, Rubber O Cement, right? This Brutal Sound Effects group. The Sawinian Turbical Pyramid. And, yeah. What was it? Chick Rodriguez called it the costume noise scene. Yeah, that was trippy. Thud after that, Hard to Find, Confusion Reigns, Part 2, Monsoon, Bombs Prended, Le Grand Illusion, Taxi Volant, destroying the French language, sorry. Boundless Relax. Here's Sam Lockward again with another kind of he's got a prodge where I guess he got inspired by these dudes who like talk with the calm music to get you calm. You Are the Light. And then finally, Watermark 6000. I don't want to go to sleep till I get into a hot tub. Enlighten us, B.
Yeah, that was a band we did. We did it by the time we got to playing music. We had our group of friends. We all had our own bands, but we would always do these little project bands for fun, one-offs. Actually, Watermark 6000 was around for a couple of years, but we set up that band to be all about sitting in hot tubs. So we loved to break into apartment complexes and go sit in their hot tubs. And Watermark 6000 was an apartment complex who had a particularly nice hot tub, and we would break in there and go sit in their hot tub. So we started a band. We wrote 12 songs. Every single song is some variation, some scenario about sitting in a hot tub.
Wow. I had a buddy, Pedro, here a long time. He's a pool man. He said there's strict health rules about that chlorine and acid because I guess they're a little breeding, a little petri dish, so watch out. What end of the party, Century Party.
End of the Century Party was the first band I played drums in. It was really my first real band. Because URN, we did play gigs around in Tampa, but End of the Century Party, we put out records. We went on the whole United States tour. We toured Europe for 2 months.
Yeah. Let's talk about drums.
You
said, you know, we heard about that foundation stuff with your folks. When do you get your first drum kit?
My mom, bless her, bought me a drum set when I was 14 years old, or I was just about to turn 14, and we lived in a tiny house, a two-bedroom house with five or six people in it and tons of cats and dogs. And I said I wanted to play drums, and she got me a drum set, and I practiced drums in this tiny house, much to the chagrin of my neighbors. But I remember my neighbor one time squirted his hose in my window because he was trying to get me to shut up. But there you go. I had a drum set. I was able to practice and play at home.
And did you get a teacher, or did you like teach yourself off records like George Hurley?
I just taught myself.
Okay. George, you bought My Generation. No, what's the one before My Generation? It's got Happy Jack. It's that one. And then you also got, who's that dude in Mau Vishnu? Billy Cobham.
All right.
Spectrum. So he teaches himself.
Billy Cobham.
It's Billy Cobham and Keith Moon, right, with headphones and just beat beat it into him. Amazing man, George Hurley.
Yeah. Oh, he has such a cool style, such a cool drum style.
But you can understand, right, coming from those two different places. Why?
For sure,
That was the idea of punk, right? You let the big flag fly. Okay, right?
Yeah, I would just watch other people play.
D. Boone had this quote, punk is whatever we made it to be. I love that. Yep. This skater guy, Rob Locker, made a sticker out of that, and I've always used it. So, okay, you get to prac at home. You're teaching yourself. Yep. And then End of the Century Party becomes your first. Now, is it your band, or did you join this band?
We all started it together, and we stayed the same lineup for the, I guess, 6 years we were together, a four-piece.
You should name the guilty people.
No? Oh, yeah. It was really good, really, really great people important in my life. Eric Owens, who was the singer, he was really kind of maybe he's the one who masterminded the project and pulled us all together. And then Edwin Velez, who was the guitar player, he ran a record store in Ybor City called Blue Chair Records. And that's where we had all the gigs in the early, mid-90s up through about 96. In Tampa was at Blue Chair, and Edwin was at the center of all kinds of underground music scenes, not only punk, but also hip hop, and had selling rad jazz records out of the record store. Learned a lot about music from him. And then we had Gavin St. Denis, who was playing bass, and we had a chemistry, and we wanted to play fast, abrasive, brutal hardcore, and that's what we did.
And you, as a drummer, man, who are you looking up to as like a sensei with the sticks?
You know, Tampa, Tampa had a very well-established death metal scene by the late 80s and early 90s, and so I was immersed in seeing extreme, like, fast death metal. But then there was a particular underground DIY punk.
I understand. Dave Lombardo?
Dave Lombardo is one of my two utmost drum heroes. He's the drummer. He's
Dude,
the drummer
I watched
Slayer.
Him once. They went on right before the Stooges at some festival, and I watched the whole thing. The guy is so relaxed playing that crazy.
How can he do that? And he's also somebody who's so fast and has just this expansive style. He'll do these drum rolls that go into other drum rolls and change their rhythm and just break up the fast-ass beat that he's doing. And really,
he's the Elvin Jones of that fucking hard rock stuff. I mean, it's incredible. It is incredible.
Yeah, and so there was a band from Tampa, a grindcore band called Asuk, and they were local heroes of ours and friends of ours, and they played super fast metallic grindcore. And their drummer, Rob Proctor, was also kind of my drum hero at a young age. I would watch him play, and I would be like, I'm going to play that fast. I don't know if I can play as fast as he plays, but I'm close.
Was there a similar scene in Miami? Is that where Biohazard comes from?
I thought Biohazard was from New York.
Oh, okay. There was kind of a shred scene in Miami, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. There was bands down there that we would interact with a lot, in particular a band called Cavity.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. And people, listeners, you got to understand, there's something called Alligator Alley that separates these two birds. And they used to have no gas station. It was like 100 miles of nothing, except gators and stuff, right?
Gators crossing the road.
Yeah. Florida. On the map, you don't think it, but it's as big as Cali because it's got that bend, and it's pretty huge.
Oh, it's massive.
On
it's
a tour, you could do five gigs, no problem. No problem. So you did have local guys. That's different than some guy off a record, right? Because you get to watch the man work.
Yep. You watch him and study him and, you know, watch his moves.
And like you said, get to be friends with him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very important.
Yeah, that's... You know, people ask me about the old days, and I always say it was about people. I think the new days are about people.
Exactly. They gotta be. The internet tries to make it about the internet, but it's still the people.
It's always going to be CB radio to me. Okay.
Yep.
Look,
we're
at the end of the first, as far as the quote ethic unquote ethics or lack of. December 4, 2021 edition. What Peter so special. Guest B. Rouse, hold tight for hour two. December 4, 2021. It's second hour. What Pedro show.
Track of all voices, it sounds like I'm out of breath. I haven't got anything to contribute to this. Wishes to be made, it has me run on ache. Cold as the streets, fade another one of my mistakes. Faded and afraid, feeling alienated, and I can't wrap my head around what they're talking about.
Thank you.
Go Show. Start off second hour with Judd doing Fast Song. Then our Margolis with Quebec. Evil House Party, brand new. House Stars Are Aligned. Frank Rosalie. From Brett Goodside's JMY collab. We're going to build a better tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah, I bet you. And it's called Fool. And then finally, Scholastic Death. Book Attack by Scholastic Death.
Yes.
Enlighten us. I don't know much about Scholastic Death, so you have to enlighten us, B.
Yeah, well, I guess I'd like to say about each of those bands. Judd was, I think it's the world's only a cappella straight edge hardcore band. That's a hoax. We made it up, and it's real. We practiced. We had songs. We put out 2 7-inches of a cappella straight edge hardcore, and so anyway, I guess we ended up just ran with that joke for a long time, and there you go.
That interpretation.
And we were so straight edge that we refused to use instruments because people who made the instruments, they may not have been straight edge as us.
That's
so
right.
We refused to use instruments. That's how straight we were.
Yeah, they were polluted and fouled.
Exactly.
Okay. Scholastic
so that
Death.
Was kind of a big joke, and then Scholastic Death was the band I started.
Well, you know what? People can't forget that the movement was a lot about humor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, don't ever forget that. This is one reason why I think it came on. The hippie thing kind of lost their humor.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, there's a tradition of straight-edge parody bands. There's a band called Crucial Youth from California. They're making songs about brushing their teeth and stuff. And then we had... We had a band called Straight Youth from Miami who also had kind of parody straight edge songs, and so Judd is kind of part of that tradition of laughter at straight edge morality.
Yeah, and, well, some parts got a little weird, right? There was something in Salt Lake City with guys getting violent over it.
Dude, yeah, it got ridiculous. It's just a real perversion
like,
and mockery.
Why humans do this to shit, right? Pat Boone said more Tootie Fruity's a little Richard. I can't figure it out.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So, hit us to fucking Scholastic Death.
When I moved to California in 1998, I met a couple of guys on tour. I was going on tour in 96 and 97 around the U.S. with End of the Century Party, and then I was also a roadie for ASUC and 97. So I met a lot of people from the DIY punk scene around the country, and I met some of them and said, hey, I'm moving to California in 98. Let's start a band. Let's play fast. And I arrived
reggae,
here to Berkeley to 98, and we started our fast band. And so that was my first band out here in California. And that ended up going places because the person who joined the band to sing was named Max Ward. He was a drummer of some really cool bands out here, like a band called Spaz, who were part of the movement in music we call Power Violence.
Always tripped me out, that name.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, Maximum Rock and Roll, right? Tim Yohannan, he had all those categories.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that's the kind of – that's the scene I dropped into out here. And
I knew some Dutch Power – I still do, bass player and Power Violence, and I couldn't figure out how it was different than hardcore.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's only in that they emphasize kind of doing these slower, sludgier, dirgier parts and interspersing the dirges, the slow ones.
Yeah, but I thought dirge. I think Tim Yohannan had a genre called dirge.
I bet he did.
He was a beautiful man. We lost him too early. Cancer got him.
Yeah,
the whole idea was anybody start a band, you call it whatever you want because it's your parallel universe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we had already, by that time, I don't know, we were already in our, I guess, early 20s. And we were self-conscious about playing already in certain established traditions of hardcore. Hardcore had been around since the early 80s, and we knew that we were doing something that had been done before. And so we were, in a way, self-consciously carrying on certain traditions. And something that we did in the early late 90s, early 2000s out here is we thought of ourselves as doing – we called it thrashcore. And that meant we were doing stuff in the style of DRI, early mid DRI.
Oh, I got to play one of their first gigs. A lot of little songs at first.
Oh, yeah.
This was up in Eugene, Oregon. But they had an evolution. I think they got into heavy metal or something, right? Hard rock?
Yeah, they did.
Corrosion did
they
it,
did,
too.
Yeah.
Corrosion of Conformity did the
exactly.
same.
Exactly. Yeah, they turned a little metal.
Carolina got it. But you know what? Music is music. Why not? Put whatever
stuff. Yeah, you gotta. I learned a quote. I learned a phrase from you from listening to your podcast. You gotta break down the Berlin Wall in your mind.
A lot had to, yeah. But Watt never uses that P word. It's my internet
show. Oh, word, your show. You gotta break down the Berlin Wall in your mind.
We don't even make
man.
That machine anymore. I still have mine, though, and it's got fucking 430 John Coltrane songs in it, so I'm not knocking that. Look, you gave me this another side project, Brain Fever.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's listen.
Every man and woman is a star.
reggae. Faster.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off that chunk of music with Brain Fever. Shun the sun. Yeah, okay. Because you got a little hyphen there, so.
Yeah,
do that. It's a cuss word, right? Mother of Sorrows. And then Springtime with Will of Power. My Daddy Ate My Eyes out of Eugene, Oregon. With C is for Cathars. Ray Shin. Pettibone Flyer. Love Raymond Pettibone. And then finally, I'm going to guess, Seepage with...
Seepage, yeah, that's the one with Brent and Blake.
But I love this spelling, because you do go seepage like a snake, you know?
Yeah.
So enlightenment to these two projects.
Yes, thanks. In the early 2000s, I was planning a Scholastic Death, and I need to close that anecdote real quick, just because I left it hanging, and I just want to say that briefly, that... Max had his own record label called 625 Records. And so he had put out a ton he was putting out tons of international hardcore power violence thrash bands. So he was a guy very well connected and very much a big integral part of putting together DIY Bay Area and international music scene. So I was super lucky to drop in a band with a guy like that, because then bands would come over from, say, Tokyo. We did two different tours up and down the West Coast with different bands from Tokyo, Japanese bands, and other bands that came over to California from the East Coast. So that was super special. And you saw that you were part of a bigger thing. It wasn't just that we were going backwards in time and recreating or participating in the tradition from the 80s. We were also extending around the globe and participating in a worldwide community of people making music together. So that was super influential and important for me, that kind of mentality.
Yeah, great. Understood. Like the alphabet, yeah. It doesn't matter when it was invented. If you're using it to write interesting novels, bring!
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Totally.
So, Seepage?
Yeah, Seepage was, I lived in Chicago. I went to graduate school in Chicago, and that's where I met Blake Edwards and Brent Gutzeit. And... they were more in the noise experimental scene, and I'm more from the punk hardcore scene. And so we decided we would do a band that was just an amalgamation of noise, experimental weirdo parts, and rudimentary, straightforward punk parts, and also some blasting, crazy fast hardcore blast parts.
But 70s punk. Like the first band that could sell out the Whiskey didn't even have a guitar. I mean, hardcore, this fast guitar drum, that really wasn't the beginning of punk.
Totally.
It was like anything, right? Zev, that guy, like, by the way, Blake Edwards took care of him in the last years of his life. This guy would hang up pieces of metal. It would almost kill him. He's a one-man band.
That's amazing.
It was like anything you could get on the stage, just as long as it wasn't fucking arena rock.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. That's what I learned a lot from being around Blake and Brent and going to the shows and the performances that was going on in their scene. And you would see that people bringing in these kind of surprising sources of sound and creating these soundscapes from all kinds of different artifacts or pieces of whatever, and getting squeezing sounds out of them and turning them into an experience of sound and noise. And that was something new to me in that Chicago scene that Seepage was a part of.
Okay. So the learning was in the doing.
Exactly.
Which is probably the best way. It ain't all in the head and theoretical. But, you know, trying to express yourselves and find your own voice, but also the collabs. Those two guys come into your life. They ain't like the guy in Florida, or Max in your life in the Bay Area. It's important, right? Those connects.
Yeah. They showed me different horizons of sound and different ways to create music together. You can't just make that stuff up by yourself. You got to be connected with other people.
Right. And one question. What was your major for graduate school?
I got a PhD in philosophy.
Yes. People are at the end of December 4, 2021, second hour. Watt P. Rush's special guest, B. Rouse. Hold tight for hour three. December 4, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt P. Rouse Show. We'll be right back.
zade bona koyo kujowa watali nsonga abalala na kuwange ya tumkida ayolesa malala kubalala wampolo goma ashibira kida netulisa batone bakula echikufulo msajja mchara wetikaliani yali bakumakuma yomwa bake yone gwatuma nayo kunchunga ze kwanta mande kera kukabili betokama denaba nabo kuyonza zakuza zayola zafunde wakamwena ne mulia agwane chitibo yo mama tebumalako mirembo yo mama mutaba nifuka mira eri mama okuleta wano kunsi chali chama jukirango kutera biranga omuchala yazala bazira bagamba mbu wakula na yani ya kulera mukwavula mukwavula
Watt for Pivo show start off third hour. Replica doing Sandy Bottoms. A little punk rock there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mamalik from their new album, Wake Up, Jacob. And then, okay, this band's known for their titles, right? Silver Mount Zion Memorial Orchestra and Tra-La-La Band with Sisters Brothers, Small Boats of Fire Are Falling from the Sky. Yeah, whoa, Boats of Fire. Ian McCone with 1000. Omozira from Scotch Rolex featuring MC Yala. This is Brother Shige in Berlin, originally from Japan, but he went to Uganda and he did some collabs with cats there. No Static after that. This is from you, Brother B. Clarified, Distilled, Recomposed. I'm thinking of like ghee.
Totally.
Lightness. To these
say what? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, those Replica and No Static were the main bands that I started when I came back to the Bay Area. You know, I moved to Chicago for graduate school, then I spent 3 years in France and Germany studying for my PhD, learning languages. And then I came back to the Bay Area and started playing music again. One of the reasons I wanted to come back here was that I knew the music scene was still very strong. I still had a lot of friends out here, and I could show up here and start playing music right away. And also I had a connection to the University of California, Berkeley, where my original philosophy mentor was still here. His name was Hubert Dreyfus. So I came to study with Bert, we call him. He's a Heidegger scholar.
Ah.
And I wrote about Heidegger, PhD, yeah.
You know, he says he was a fucking Nazi, but he did say something. One thing that always stuck in my head, we should spend more times in graveyards.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Right? Life is not a rehearsal. That was a joke song the Minutemen wrote. I was trying to be ironic.
Yes,
it's
nice.
Not a rehearsal.
Yeah, I mean, reckoning with the intrinsic finitude of life is important for seeing the fragility and the intensity and the specialness that life can have. We can't have any of that without death. And so that's part of the, you know, part of the upshot of that, what he called being towards death. And yeah, so I've been thinking about that.
Phil,
and
you mentioned
back
language.
Here playing music.
You mentioned language. Can I ask you one little question, philosophical?
Yeah.
The Germans have two ways to say to be, right? The sinned and the. And,
mm-hmm.
and this has some bearing on their philosophical thing, going back to Mr. Hegel and that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you agree with that? Okay. So Mr. Wittgenstein was on something with that, with the words come first.
Yeah, absolutely. That the limits of my language or the limits of my world is something like Wittgenstein said.
Yeah, yeah.
And really what Hegel and Heidegger and Wittgenstein have in common is to see life in terms of a process rather than in terms of a thing.
Yeah.
It's a happening. It's an event.
Dynamic.
It's not,
dynamic.
Not a thing. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a noun.
And
it's a fucking verb.
And so it's a fucking verb, exactly. And when we were recording the first No Static record, and we were looking for song titles and a theme for the record, and we ended up calling our first record "We All Die in the End," and that's actually a riff on a Heidegger idea. I gave a presentation at a philosophy conference, and my bandmates were there, and my bandmate Robert Collins took out this sheet that I handed out at my talk, and he said, maybe there's some ideas here for a song. And we started riffing on some of the stuff Heidegger was saying about death, and we came up with We All Die in the End. And that's the name of our first record. And so there's these kind of existentialist themes that run through.
Raymond Pettibone, for a label of our Cracks in the Sidewalk comp, when me and D. Boone first started a label, for a classless society, and he's got the graveyard there, right?
Yes.
Look, you gave me this Conquest for Death. Okay, what a Sugui. Did you plan this?
Government system for the religious wrong. Does it jump in the chest of my own? Eradicated dogs, state of terror state. We're evidence of the police. Burning!
stare at myself in the mirror and I see a boy, not a man. Well, I have tried to live my life like a man, not you, and I know how it feels to be dragged across the desert where I can't move till I feel and I rang the bell. I was kneeling at the confessional with a lot to confess. Father came up to me, told me that God is murder.
Oh,
from Pedro's show. Last music for this edition. Bloodsport of the Gods from Conquest for Death. And the Klang Quartet, Scotty Moore in North Carolina. They're live at the International Noise Conference, February 6, 2020, part one of two. Next edition, we'll hear the second part. Overhaul after that. Can't go back. Scott, finally, Saber. Simize.
No. Yes.
It's not Sabre. Okay.
No, it's not.
Okay. Enlightenment to these projects.
That Conquest for Death is a band that I joined. They had already been together. They were part of the same scene that Scholastic Death was a part of. They had a band before called What Happens Next that were part of the same, what I call thrashcore / power violence movement from the West Coast around the early 2000s. They started Conquest for Death after that, and the mission of Conquest for Death was to go tour all around the world, write music quickly, and go play it in surprising places that most Western bands don't go and tour a lot of times. So before I was in the band, they did some shows out in Africa, for example. I finally joined the band back in 2012, and the one big trip I went on with them, we went to Mongolia.
We went to Mongolia, China, South Korea, and Japan.
You know?
I've done no. People say, "What? You've played all over the world." I say, "I haven't played one African gig."
Yeah, totally. They're out there.
I know.
I haven't done that either.
India,
but they did. I did get to go to Mongolia.
Subcontinent of India, right?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Watts never played there.
Yeah.
How many millions of islands in Indonesia? Anyway, go on.
Yeah, exactly. So, so that's the story with Conquest for Death. The project is to tour in surprising places and break down barriers and borders with music. But Saber was another project band like Brain Fever was. That's or like Watermark 6000 was in my life. There's been these side projects that you do for certain focused limited amount of time, and that gives them a certain the lack of seriousness lends it a certain potency and a sense of abandon that we're just going to create. Saber's been this project where we just write songs quickly and blast through them and play them. And it's been my most recent project out here that I've been really enjoying playing with. And Brain Fever was a project band that I did with old friends of mine from Florida and South Carolina. We met together in Atlanta and then wrote a bunch of songs, drove to South Carolina and recorded them and then made the record. And Chris Vickel, who's in that band, is now a movie director. He made two really cool movies I'd like to plug. One of them's called The Theta Girl and one of them is called Bad Girls. And Brain Fever has a song in the Theta Girl soundtrack. So okay. People should check out Chris's movies.
Also, we didn't get to Replica.
Replica. Yeah, Replica was in the another early mid 2010s band for me, and my PhD advisor Bert used to call Replica in a way that only an 85-year-old person could probably say my all girl hardcore band. but it was me and my still partner Alicia and Dharma and Juliana from Brazil, and oh, it was such a fun band to be a part of. And this was a band that the chemistry was so poof there and natural, and magical. We wrote five songs really quickly, played a show, and it was just then we were just playing shows all over the place, all up and down the West Coast. Took a band from Japan on tour, did 3 7-inches, and just a wonderful project to be a part of.
So right now, if somebody asks you, what band are you playing in? You would say Saber? Not Saber. Conquest for Death?
Yeah, Saber. I would say Saber, and then I have a brand new band with just me and my friend Scooch or Chris, and it's fast, super fast, and we're looking for our bass player and our singer still. I got kind of fresh slate of bands coming up right now. But Saber's one of them. We're kind of winding Saber down, though.
Oh, okay.
We're
going to
rip the last batch of songs and then maybe do our next project with the same guys.
Is there a place on the internet people can find you?
That's a good question. I have a page on Discogs. B. Roos on Discogs has links to my bands, and a lot of them are on YouTube and on Bandcamp.
Okay, and people, I guess, spell it for you.
I don't have my own website with links to all my own stuff. Maybe it's something I got to think about doing.
Yes, please, right? Those corporate things are one thing, but to have your own, it's like having your own fanzine. People, you spell it R-O-U-S-S-E, okay? Go to Discogs and check that out. I did. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff. And also, YouTube.com, yeah, performances. Incredible. So we're almost out of time here. Advice.
Advice is to look at life as an opportunity to co-create with your friends and your strangers, and don't think about it too much unless you need to.
The examined life is worth living. Okay, beautiful. When you get these new projects developed and got music, will you come back on the show? We can play it and talk about it?
I would love to do that.
Ah, beautiful. Brother B, thank you so much for being on the show. People, December 4th, 2021, Dishwapito, so keep your powder dry.